Chapter 93. A sea parlor described, with some of its tenants. I might as well give some idea of the place in which the doctor and I lived together so sociably. Most persons know that a ship's forecastle embraces the forward part of the deck about the bowsprit. The same term, however, is generally bestowed upon the sailors' sleeping quarters, which occupy a space immediately beneath, and are partitioned off by a bulkhead. Planted right in the bows, or, as sailors say, in the very eyes of the ship, this delightful apartment is of a triangular shape, and is generally fitted with two tiers of rude bunks. Those of the Julia were in a most deplorable condition, mere wrecks, some having been torn down altogether to patch up others, and on one side there were but two standing. But with most of the men it made little difference, whether they had a bunk or not, since, having no bedding, they had nothing to put in it but themselves. Upon the boards of my own crib I spread all the old canvas, and old clothes I could pick up. For a pillow, I wrapped an old jacket round a log. This helped a little the wear and tear of one's bones when the ship rolled. Rude hammocks made out of old sails were in many cases used as substitutes for the demolished bunks, but the space they swung in was so confined that they were far from being agreeable. The general aspect of the forecastle was dungeon-like and dingy in the extreme. In the first place, it was not 5 feet from deck to deck, and even this space was encroached upon by two outlandish cross timbers bracing the vessel, and by the sailors' chests, over which you must needs crawl in getting about. At meal times, and especially when we indulged in after-dinner chat, we sat about the chests like a parcel of tailors. In the middle of all were two square, wooden columns, denominated in marine architecture bowsprit bits. They were about a foot apart, and between them, by a rusty chain, swung the forecastle lamp, burning day and night, and forever casting two long black shadows. Lower down, between the bits, was a locker, or sailor's pantry, kept in abominable disorder, and sometimes requiring a vigorous cleaning and fumigation. All over, the ship was in a most dilapidated condition. But in the forecastle it looked like the hollow of an old tree going to decay. In every direction the wood was damp and discolored, and here and there soft and porous. Moreover, it was hacked and hewed without mercy, the cook frequently helping himself to splinters for kindling wood from the bits and beams. Overhead, every carline was sooty, and here and there deep holes were burned in them, a freak of some drunken sailors on a voyage long previous. From above, you entered by a plank, with two legs, slanting down from the scuttle, which was a mere hole in the deck. There being no slide, to draw over in case of emergency, the tarpaulin temporarily placed there was little protection from the spray heaved over the bows, so that in anything of a breeze the place was miserably wet. In a squall, the water fairly poured down in sheets like a cascade, swashing about, and afterward spurting up between the chests like the jets of a fountain. Such were our accommodations aboard of the Julia, but bad as they were, we had not the undisputed possession of them. Myriads of cockroaches and regiments of rats disputed the place with us. A greater calamity than this can scarcely befall a vessel in the South Seas. So warm is the climate, that it is almost impossible to get rid of them. You may seal up every hatchway, and fumigate the hull till the smoke forces itself out at the seams, and enough will survive to repeople the ship in an incredibly short period. In some vessels, the crews of which after a hard fight have given themselves up, as it were, for lost, the vermin seem to take actual possession, the sailors being mere tenants by sufferance. With sperm whalemen, hanging about the line, as many of them do for a couple of years on the stretch, it is infinitely worse than with other vessels. As for the Julia, these creatures never had such free and easy times as they did in her crazy old hull. Every chink and cranny swarmed with them. They did not live among you, but you among them. So true was this, that the business of eating and drinking was better done in the dark than in the light of day. Concerning the cockroaches, there was an extraordinary phenomenon, for which none of us could ever account. Every night they had a jubilee. The first symptom was an unusual clustering and humming among the swarms lining the beams overhead, and the inside of the sleeping places. This was succeeded by a prodigious coming and going on the part of those living out of sight. Presently they all came forth, the larger sort racing over the chests and planks, winged monsters darting to and fro in the air, and the small fry buzzing in heaps almost in a state of fusion. On the first alarm, all who were able darted on deck, while some of the sick who were too feeble lay perfectly quiet, the distracted vermin running over them at pleasure. The performance lasted some 10 minutes, during which no hive ever hummed louder. Often it was lamented by us that the time of the visitation could never be predicted. It was liable to come upon us at any hour of the night, and what a relief it was when it happened to fall in the early part of the evening. Nor must I forget the rats. They did not forget me. Tame as Trenck's mouse, they stood in their holes peering at you like old grandfathers in a doorway. Often they darted in upon us at meal times, and nibbled our food. The first time they approached Wyman too, he was actually frightened. But becoming accustomed to it, he soon got along with them much better than the rest. With curious dexterity he seized the animals by their legs, and flung them up the scuttle, to find a watery grave. But I have a story of my own to tell about these rats. One day the cabin steward made me a present of some molasses, which I was so choice of, that I kept it hid away in a tin can in the farthest corner of my bunk. Not faring as we did, this molasses dropped upon a biscuit was a positive luxury, which I shared with none but the doctor, and then only in private. And sweet as the treacle was, how could bread thus prepared and eaten in secret be otherwise than pleasant? One night our precious can ran low, and in canting it over in the dark, something beside the molasses slipped out. How long it had been there, kind providence never revealed, nor were we over anxious to know, for we hushed up the bare thought as quickly as possible. The creature certainly died a luscious death, quite equal to Clarence's in the Bud of Malmsey. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.